Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart, and who's this in the studio?
My name's Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Now, Fred, you're not only a software engineer and a creation speaker, but also Fred is the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society that worldwide has hundreds of scientists who reject evolution and believe in creation and that God created the earth recently.
That's right. Over the years, Bob, there's been a growing number of prominent scientists who are rejecting the standard paradigm of evolution and millions of years. Right. We wanted to talk about the upcoming Institute for Creation Research RATE conference sponsored by a local group here in Denver, Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship.
Yeah, this conference, this is going to be good. It's on Saturday, September 15th, and I'll be going. I'll be bringing a couple of our boys. And they're young, but I think they'll be able to follow these scientists in their presentations.
Yeah, the speakers that they have showing up to this conference are all very good at presenting their topic to both a layman and a scientific audience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great for all ages. I've been to the conference in San Diego presented by ICR soon after the RATE group finished their work, which we'll talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. But yeah, highly recommend this conference. It's at Colorado Community Church. It's off of Hamden in Colorado, just a block south of Hamden on Colorado Boulevard.
And we'll give more information about how you could register. It's $25 for adults for a Saturday event. Okay, so we're going to talk about this conference.
That's right. The RATE Project, which stands for Radioisotopes in the Age of the Earth, was an 8-year study sponsored and promoted by the Institute of Creation Research and the Creation Research Society. It was conducted by a team of 7 scientists who have provided exciting new scientific evidence which supports the biblical teaching of a young Earth.
Now, these scientists, these are hardcore scientists, some of them from our national labs like Sandia Labs, Los Alamos National Labs. And these are guys that are well-known, and they're published in peer-reviewed journals. These are great scientists.
Yeah, many of them award-winning. They have many published articles. John Baumgartner was featured in Time magazine. Mm-hmm. So these aren't just unknown scientists. Russ Humphreys was a leading scientist at Sandia Labs, highly respected by his peers. He's one of these scientists who, through the years, came to realize that the evidence does not support evolution or an old Earth. And he'll be one of the scientists presenting, Russ Humphreys, John Baumgartner. Dr. Don DeYoung will also be there. He was one of the original 7 who conducted these studies, and he's going to talk about evidence for rapid decay that goes along with what Humphreys is going to talk about. And again, we'll get to that in a second. And finally, Gary Parker will be presenting on the theological arguments for a young Earth. Mm-hmm. And he's a great speaker, too. He's also going to be at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting Friday, not today, but next Friday. He'll be at Holly Hills Church off of Evans. If you go to the website youngearth.org, you can get directions to that meeting. And that's the group that's sponsoring this RATE conference by ICR here in Denver. And again, Gary Park will be speaking there, and there's no charge for that talk.
Mm-hmm. That the local group sponsoring this is the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. They have a regular monthly meeting. And so to find out about that and about this conference, Thousands Not Billions, you could go to their website, which is youngearth.org.
That's right.
So now let's talk about the arguments these guys are going to make.
Okay. What I've done is I pulled some conclusions out of a book that was produced based on these studies. Now, there's 2 books that were very technical called The Radioisotopes in the Age of the Earth, Volumes 1 and 2. But they also produced a book for the layman called Thousands Not Billions that we would highly recommend that they'll be selling this at the conference. Mm-hmm. And for starters, one of their conclusions, and Bob, we've talked about this before on the show, is the amount of C14 that we're finding it where it's just not expected.
Carbon-14, it decays rapidly within thousands of years, and so it shouldn't be in things that are millions of years old.
That's right. It has a half-life of 5,700 years. So just imagine, after 5,700 years, C14, half of it should be gone and half of it should be nitrogen. So theoretically, after 100,000 years, you shouldn't have any of it detectable at all. Mm. And what's happening is we're finding C14 in coal that's supposed to be millions of years old. Now, if that coal really is millions of years old, that should have been plenty of time for the C14 to have decayed into nitrogen.
Right.
But we're finding C14 in coal, in diamonds, in natural gas, everywhere that it's not expected. Mm-hmm. Now, evolutionists can't blame it on contamination because, again, we find it everywhere. No matter what you do with a sample, you're always going to find C14.
Fred, you just mentioned coal and diamonds, but literally everywhere, amber in natural gas, in dinosaur fossils, in collagen, in soft tissue. Everything they test, they find it everywhere.
That's right. And it puts a maximum age on the on that particular sample. So if coal is millions of years old and you find carbon-14 in it, that says, well, it can't be millions of years old. The oldest it could possibly be is really 50 to 100,000 years old. So it puts a limit on how old it could be. It's a powerful argument against old Earth. It's amazing how people, the you know, evolutionists will say, oh, carbon-14 proves the Earth is old. First of all, they don't use carbon-14 to date the age of the Earth. But
yeah,
second,
that
it's a power-
is, and you know what? That's the number one answer we've gotten in 15 years, asking college students, high school students, what evidence is there that the Earth is billions of years old? They say carbon-14.
Yeah. And
which shows the complete failure of our public school system and its teaching of science.
Exactly. And it's the opposite. Carbon-14 is a powerful argument for a young Earth because it invalidates the possibility of an old Earth, the fact that we find it everywhere.
The greatest enemy of evolution is modern science.
That's right.
That's turning out to be more and more true. So now, this book, Thousands, Not Billions, it'll be available at the conference. For people who can't go to the conference, we here at Bob and Yurt Live, we have our September telethon going to try to keep our show on the internet at kgov.com for another year. And people call in and they'll make a $100 pledge. We're up to $1,700 toward our goal of $20,000. So, Fred, we have a long way to go. But maybe we could use this book to encourage people over the next couple weeks during this telethon. If you would like to pledge $100 or more and you'd like a copy of this book, Thousands, Not Billions, please let us know and we'll send you this as a gift. Thousands, Not Billions, by Dr. Don DeYoung, who is part of the RAPE Project.
That's right. And again, it's written in a form that's easy to understand. There's some technical stuff in it, but it's written for the layman. I think people will enjoy the book. Mm-hmm. There's lots of great evidence in here, powerful evidence, and we're going to talk about some of that here on the show today that's documented in this book that really brings to light just the amount of powerful evidence there is that counteracts an old Earth and supports a young Earth version as taught in the Bible.
Okay. All right. So that is exciting. And this carbon-14 argument was pushed forward by one of these scientists who will be in Denver Saturday the 15th.
That's right. Dr. John Baumgartner, again, the plate tectonics expert who was featured in Time magazine.
And so he did some of this research himself and got these samples and from coal and diamonds.
Yeah, and the diamonds, they wanted to use diamonds because diamonds obviously is the hardest substance on Earth. And so for carbon-14 to be inside of diamonds, that you can't contaminate diamonds with carbon-14, especially inside of the diamond. It
right.
just, you can't. So it totally eliminates the argument that it was contaminated by the C-14.
Because, for example, groundwater, say rain through the atmosphere, picks up C-14 and it brings it into the ground. And so, yeah, groundwater could transport C-14, but diamonds don't absorb water.
Exactly.
So when you break open a diamond that is a good quality diamond, it doesn't have cracks in it or whatever, you break it open, you take a chunk of that diamond, you send it off to a high precision lab. Now, would this be a creationist lab that's just telling us what we want to here?
Oh, no, definitely not. We use independent labs that if they knew it was a creation project, they probably wouldn't accept the sample and wouldn't do the work.
They probably wouldn't do the work. And so the creationists take these samples and get them dated carbon-14 wise, and they come back that there is significant amounts of carbon-14. And John Baumgartner is going to present this and explain how he did the research. And he's one of the pioneers in this, although it's not just creationists. It's also atheist scientists who came across carbon-14 everywhere they look for it. So basically, they stop looking for it.
Yeah, they can't explain it because they know they can't blame it on contamination.
Right. They can't blame it on contamination. And they've tried to argue that it's a result of other radioactivity happening in the crust of the Earth, only it has been shown, and John Baumgartner has addressed this and others, that there's 10,000 times too little radioactivity in the Earth to account for the generation of all this carbon 14.
That's right. And he does mention this in the book. And also, there's an article in the CRSQ by Russell Rhoda that addresses this very subject. Again, what's happening is evolutionists, to try to explain this, say that things like uranium decaying into lead produce some carbon 14. Well, that's true. But it's such a small amount that it can't even come close to accounting for the amount of carbon-14 that we're seeing.
You would need 10,000 times more uranium decaying to lead in the crust of the Earth to account for the carbon-14 everywhere. And like you're saying, and we're saying, it's not carbon-14 in one place, it's everywhere. And so there's not 10,000 times more uranium everywhere in the crust of the Earth.
That's right.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Now, Bob, another item that's discussed in this book, another subject or a study, was helium that was found trapped in zircons. Now, why is that important? First
helium,
of all, helium.
We know helium. It's a gas.
Yeah, helium is a noble gas, so it's slippery and it easily can.
It's tiny.
It's tiny and slippery, and it'll find its way out of the zircons. It's going to.
So if you have a helium balloon, eventually the helium will all get out of the balloon.
That's right. Exactly.
That's what gas does. It likes to go places.
It likes to, yeah.
Wherever it can go, it'll go.
That's right.
And so helium zircon. So what's zircon?
A zircon is a crystal that's found on a piece of granite, for example. Now, it's not those crystals that you can see with your naked eye. It's they're actually much smaller than that. But it is a crystal. And when we found helium in those zircons, we knew that the rock couldn't be billions of years old because of the nature of helium. It's going to escape out of the rock.
In other words, helium would get out of a crystal the same way it gets out of a helium balloon.
That's right.
It'll take longer because a crystal is more dense than a balloon.
That's right. And zircons are similar to diamonds. They're a hard structure, and so the helium isn't going to seep into the zircons. But creationists wanted to do a study and a test on this, and what this rate group decided to do, and this team was led by Dr. Russ Humphreys, the person we mentioned that was a scientist at Sandia Labs.
Mm-hmm. And so Baumgartner was at Los Alamos.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Right. So now we're at Sandia Labs.
Yes. And Humphreys developed a prediction of how rapidly the helium should escape from the zircon crystals. It's called diffusion. If the rock were 6,000 years old, and how rapid it should leave if it were 1.5 billion years old. So he developed a prediction and published the prediction in 2000.
Now,
so
I've seen these predictions,
yes.
And they're also graphed.
They're graphed. And you
so
know, this
you
is
can
the way
see
science,
visually.
That's right. So this is the way science is supposed to work. You make a prediction. And then you test your model by having it. You run your tests with an independent lab who would have no bias in this. So Dr. Humphreys and his team published what they predicted the diffusion rate would be back in 2000. They then presented to an independent lab some zircon crystals to have the diffusion rate measured.
And so they said, "Tell us, measure how much helium is in these crystals.
Measure how much is in them, and also the rate at which they leave the crystal at different temperatures."
Mm-hmm.
And so Humphreys had already made predictions on what this should be if the rock were 6,000 years old and if the rock were 1.5 billion years old. So they sent these samples to a lab, and they did it through a coal mining company that were friends with creationists, because they could have never got this study done if this lab knew that it was a study for creation.
Right. So they went to a coal mining company.
That's right.
And they said, "Could you test these zircon crystals for us?"
Yeah, and don't let them know that this is what the test is about. And so the lab came back with their results, and the results came back in 2003, and it was published in the second rate book. And the data.
So this is 3 years later.
Yes.
Right? So 3 years later. First, they published the graphs of what they predicted if these crystals are 6,000 years old or if they're 1.5 million years old.
That's right. And just imagine if you can.
Billion.
Yes.
I'm sorry. 1.5. Let me say that again. So first, they published these graphs of here's what we expect if these rocks are 6,000 years old. Here's what we expect if they are 1.5 billion years old, as the evolutionists claim.
That's right. And on the graph, you'll see points on a plot. Mm-hmm. And the 6,000-year plot has a bunch of points that are all lined up together. And then the 1.5 billion has a bunch of plots that line up on a certain line that you can see the direction it's going. Mm-hmm. When the data came in, it lined up perfectly. Well, not perfectly, but within an error of 1 to 5% on the 6,000-year trend line. Mm-hmm. It was powerful evidence that the rock is 6,000 years old. Humphreys noted, it is not often in science that experimental data so clearly validate a pre-published numerical model.
Mm.
It was powerful evidence that this rock is 6,000 years old. You know, Bob, most of our evidence against an old Earth is just that. It's against an old Earth, but it doesn't necessarily give a date for how old the Earth is. Most of our arguments against an old Earth just put a limit on how old the Earth could be, and it's usually under 100,000 years, so it pretty much invalidates an old Earth, but it doesn't tell us how old the Earth is. Well, this experiment did. It came in right at 6,000 years. There's not very many we have. Mitochondria DNA came in at 6,000 years, by the way, but we don't have that many that zero in right on 6,000. This was powerful because, again, it was science the way it's supposed to work. A prediction was made, a study was done by an independent lab, and it confirmed that the rock was 6,000 years old.
That is exciting. Now, you just mentioned mitochondrial DNA. Let's talk about that for a second since you mentioned it.
Sure.
DNA, we know that things are breaking down. We have mutations. Mutations occur at a certain rate. And so you back up and you look for the original mitochondrial Eve, and you find out that these mutations have been occurring for thousands of years, not millions of years. And all that junk DNA that atheists were claiming was evidence against the creator, turns out it's not junk DNA, and we only have thousands of years of mutations in our mitochondrial DNA.
That's right. Scientists originally found with mitochondrial Eve, what we're talking about here, they found that when you study the mitochondrial DNA breakdown, and by the way, mitochondria is like the power supply in the cell. It's separate from the nucleus. It's a different DNA from the nucleus.
Most of the DNA in a cell is in the nucleus. Some of it is elsewhere.
Is in the mitochondria, which is like the power supply of a cell. So they were able to measure the rate, and they determined that all human life came from what they call a mitochondrial Eve 100 to 200,000 years ago.
Like Adam and Eve.
So it partly confirmed the biblical account in that they admitted everybody came from a couple. But they were okay to publish it because it was 100 to 200,000 years.
Right.
Well, they didn't have enough data samples. And strangely enough, the Romanov family, do you remember them, the Russian Revolution? They dug them up, and they were able to do a much more thorough study. And if you look at an article in Science Magazine in 1998 published by Ann Gibbons, she noted that based on the new data, the mitochondrial Eve data was off, and that it turns out mitochondrial DNA showed that mitochondrial Eve was 6,000 years old. And this is published in the Science. And
right.
So, and of course, her very next, she says, you know, hey, this is 6,000 years old. And her very next sentence is, well, this can't be true.
Right. Right. It can't be true because we've been evolving off of chimpanzees and apes for 2 to 3 million years.
Yeah.
So what's going on? But anyway, we know what's going on. And modern science is the greatest enemy of evolution.
It is. Just do a search on mitochondrial DNA and you should find the study that showed that mitochondrial DNA shows that mitochondrial Eve is 6,000 years old. Now, that 6,000-year date sounds familiar, doesn't it, Bob?
Yeah, it sure does. A biblical time frame of thousands, not billions.
That's right.
That's pretty exciting.
It is exciting. I wanted to read one more quote by Dr. Russ Humphreys on this helium and zircons. He said that this sequence of events places the burden of disproof on the critics because they must explain how, if there is no truth to our model, the data accidentally, by sheer coincidence, just happened by blind chance to fall right on the prediction of our model.
Mm.
And boy, I encourage you to get the book because you'll see the graphs that we're talking about, and you'll see how the data just fell lined up perfectly with the 6,000-year trend. It's really powerful.
If someone would like to give to our telethon to help us stay on the internet for another year at KGOV.com, you could do that two ways. You could go to the internet and donate at our store, kgov.com, or you can call us 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. And if you give $100 or more, ask, Bob, could you send me that book, Thousands, Not Billions? And we'll be happy to get some copies of this book and send them out as a thank you to those of you who give $100 or more. If you could give less, please, we're not saying we only value people who give $100 or more. So whatever you can give, thank you very, very much for helping us stay on the air for another year. Okay, so Fred, now who should we talk about for this rate conference coming up Saturday, September 15th in Denver?
Okay. Another thing that the rate group found, they did research on rocks from different parts of the world, dating these rocks, And they find discordant dates. In other words, the dates are just all over the map. Mm-hmm. They don't, they don't all merge on 4.6 billion years as the age of the Earth, because you'll hear from evolutionists how all these independent studies show that,
right,
you know, the age of the Earth is 4.6 billion years old.
The more that I've been looking into this, the more you realize it's sort of like making sausage. You don't want to watch it happen. And it turns out that, well, let me talk about carbon-14 for a moment.
Sure.
They take woolly mammoths, and they carbon-14 date the mammoth. And they get differences in ages if they date the legs versus the ribs of 30,000 years. So what we know is that something dramatic was going on with radioactive decay sometime in the past, something weird. And the whole story of radioactive decay is not yet understood. In fact, it's hardly understood.
And where a lot of the evidence seems to be pointing, though, is that some kind of event occurred in the past that caused rapid radioactive decay, mm-hmm, and that would cause discordant dates all over the place. And so probably one of the biggest findings out of the Rate Group, and they mention this in the book, is there's a lot of evidence that at some point in the past, rapid decay occurred. And we have evidence of this from secular labs right now that given the right amount of temperature, pressure, you can cause radioactive decay to occur much faster than it is just in a stable environment.
And that is fascinating. And of course, then as Christians, we look to the global flood as perhaps the event that caused the disruption in radioactive decay. And I'm a fan of Dr. Walt Brown, his book In the Beginning, and his model of the flood, that 10 miles beneath the crust of the earth, there was a subterranean chamber, a sea, and it went around the whole world. And during the flood, the crust broke open and fell in on that mile deep sea. That is such an extraordinary event. And the forces, temperatures, and pressures that would generate perhaps is sufficient to account for this change in radioactive decay back during the flood.
Yeah, that would have been such a catastrophic event. It easily could have caused the disruption that we see in these this evidence that shows that there was some kind of rapid accelerated decay in the past. Mm. And it would explain much of what we see in the rocks. You know, Bob, we were talking about these discordant dates, and I mentioned to you earlier before the show that there's a high school textbook that mentions a rock formation called the Trinal Beds. Mm. And the high school textbook says we've determined an absolute date of these rocks at 300,000 years. And then the very next sentence, plus or minus 300,000 years.
Yeah, that's funny.
So either that's a typo or that's really typical silly evolution propaganda, yeah, to right, say you got an absolute date of 300,000 years, plus or minus 300,000 years.
Right. And when they take rocks and they could just, they're down in the earth at some deep strata, and it depends on what chunk of that strata they date, they get radically different ages. And so
different parts of a rock give different ages.
Of the same rock. Different parts of an animal give different ages. And so this is not the nice, tidy, neat story of billions of years that our public schools are teaching students. It's not.
That's right. Dr. Steve Austin, who wasn't able to make this conference, he wrote the chapter in this book, Thousands Not Billions, on these discordant dates, and I think you'll find it real interesting. So another topic, Bob, that was in the book that I found really interesting was the last chapter, and it has to do with, it's really along the theological argument. And what this guy did was he did a linguistic study of Genesis 1 through 2, verse 3, and showed that it supports a young earth position based on how the text is written. And what he did was he used statistics and the way verbs are used. And Bob, you know more about verb usage in the Hebrew than I do.
Well, I've studied Greek, but not Hebrew. But certainly when you have poetic language versus narrative and historical text, it's a very different kind of use of the language.
That's right. And so he looked at the verb usage throughout the Bible and where people, you know, just uniformly agree that a certain text is poetry or a certain text is narrative in history. Mm-hmm. And then he compared that text to Genesis, the early chapters in Genesis, and he shows statistically there's a probability of 0.9999 that the first chapters of Genesis were written as a historical account, not poetry.
That means looking at it that way, a virtual 100%
virtual 100% certainty that it's written as a historical narrative. Because you get Christians who want to compromise on the age of the earth, and they claim that, oh, the first chapters of the Bible are just poetry and it's allegory. But when you read it, it's written as history. And this author shows in the last chapter of this book the probability, using his statistical analysis, that it can't possibly be poetry. And it's a real interesting chapter. He's got all kinds of graphs and plots.
Yeah, and Jesus Christ took it as historical. And Moses in the Ten Commandments, God himself with his own finger, takes it as historical 6 days, six literal days, when God created the heavens, the earth, the seas, and everything in them.
That's right.
Including man. So, Fred, this is going to be an exciting conference. It's called Thousands, Not Billions. It's put on by ICR, which is out of Southern California, Institute for Creation Research, but it's sponsored locally by the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. So to find out more, to register, you could register online or at the door, go to their website, youngearth.org. Sorry, I always get that. Youngearth.org. You go to youngearth.org, click on the Thousands, Not Billions banner there, and then you could register. It's going to be so exciting. I'll be there with at least a couple of our kids, Fred, and it's going to be a really good time. If you can't be there, then this book, Thousands, Not Billions, if you could consider calling us, helping us stay on the internet for another year, and we'll be happy to get copies of this book and send you one as a thank you for those of you who give to our telethon a gift of $100 or more. And so, Fred, any last comments? Your own website is evolutionfairytale.com.
And we have what you'll find there are graphical series on different things that make a parody of evolution. Some of the things I got one idea from you, Bob, many years ago about the exploding giraffe head. You have to go to the website to see what I mean. But I think you'll get a kick out of that. We also have a forum where we have debates on creation versus evolution. We've got a section for Bible, Bible commentary and debate.
And let me say this also. We have a CD called The Age of the Earth Debate, where I got to debate a couple scientists, me and a friend of mine, downtown Denver, and it was a great debate, a lot of fun. You were there, right?
I was
Fred?
There, and boy, you guys slaughtered him.
We slaughtered him. It was a 2-3 hour moderated debate. It was with Hugh Ross's Reasons to Believe Colorado chapter. It was really fun. So you could also get that from our website, kgov.com, or if you'd like that as a gift, if you give to the telethon and you'd like a gift, you could ask for the Age of the Earth debate. We'll be happy to send you that so you can choose either the Thousands Not Billions book or the Age of the Earth debate. Fred Williams, thank you so much for joining me again.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be back.
Great to have Fred. And Saturday, September 22nd, 1 week later, is the banquet for Colorado Right to Life and Maranatha Christian Center. What a great school.